Now presenting the Webcomic Beacon Newscast.
Welcome, everyone. This is the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, episode 165. I'm your host for today, Eric Kimball, writer for the webcomic Exern.com, along with a number of other comics. Today we've got, I'm joining you from the streets in sunny Frederick here, and we've got two other people on. We've got first the indomitable Mark Savory of Autumn Lake.
Well, hello there.
And, of course, the podcaster extreme fest of too many things to list.com.
Hello, everybody. From Frederick, Colorado?
No, Frederick, Maryland.
Okay, all right. I was going to say, that's where Tanya lives, I think.
No, it's like that, but less scenic. So we're going to jump right in here to the news. We've got a number of news to go through here. First news, and this has been a bit of a buzz on the web right now, Google is starting their own payment system. This is called OnePass, and it is a micropayment system.
Sweet.
Looks like it's going to be a challenger to both Apple and to Google and to PayPal. They're getting into the business, and they're starting out on that and bringing some competition and also bringing Google's trademark collecting everything that you ever need to know about you and then some. The advantage of the Google OnePass, as people are saying, is that Google's grand collection information will be passed on to the people, the vendors. So whether that's good or bad is not clear. Recently there was a dust-up over Apple not passing on that information, so Google came out and said, information? We can do that.
Well, what kind of information are we talking about that'd be passed from the purchaser to the
Well, right now it's demographic information from what I'm reading online.
Mm.
Basically, you know, age, address, other things.
Well, I mean, all a merchant really needs to know is what your shipping address is and what you bought.
Well, not even that for digital. I mean, for if you're selling to a phone app, all they need to do is send the phone app.
Yeah, right.
But
so they would need a place to send it, so they would technically need a quote-unquote shipping address. I mean, your digital gadget, whatever it is.
But say I'm a merchant here. Let's have a better example. Say you are the creator of a really big webcomic, and you're trying to get people to advertise on your site. You're not going through Project Wonderful. You want some of these high-paying ads where you're going to go directly to the advertisers.
Right.
You've got to tell them the age of your people, what sort of products they like to buy. You've got to tell them all this stuff, and the more you can tell them about your readership, the more money you make.
Ah.
So for an independent,
so just demographics then.
Yeah. For an independent, what Apple does, who cares? We don't care that someone is, you know, 35 years old and, you know, like Sailor Moon stuff.
I can understand maybe.
I'd rather not know.
I can understand maybe if, like, their zip code or general region, but not like, if you don't need my address, you don't need my address sort of thing,
right.
You know. But, yeah, I don't know.
And Apple is coming down on that side of it that the vendors don't need to know. And Apple has restricted that, and vendors are very upset about that. Google is saying, yeah, sure, we got that information, we'll give it to you. So it depends which side of the debate you're on.
I know I've mentioned it before, but it seems to me that with Google, they keep coming up with these ideas and never following through on them. And they try to follow through, and it's just, you know, a big... vaporware, or it's,
no. Here's the answer.
Or it's a flop, you know.
Here's the answer. They got people. They got the Google people actually have time on their own to come up with their own ideas, versus the ones that they already have going. And a lot of times, that's where these new ideas come from. But with all those good new ideas, if they don't keep coming up with new ideas and at least trying some of them, they're not going to find the ones that work. So they're trying, they're failing, they're trying, and then they're going to get something that'll basically pay for the failures. And that's how you are progressive. Now, the problem with Google is I don't think their legal department is in on anything until after something happens. They don't have anybody going, wait a minute, you can't do that before they launch something is the problem. And I heard somewhere, I don't know who said it, it might have been on the news or might have been last time in the Webcomic Beacon, but they can't claim dumb forever. They could be just kind of absent-minded, or they're being very tactical here, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, this might work for Google because vendors, the big vendors, really want that demographic information. I mean, that is money to them. So if Apple is saying, we're going to cut you off, and Apple has, we talked about it last week, Apple came out here and said, yeah, all you big subscription services, you have to go through us now. And so they're upset with Apple, and so there may be a chance here. But,
well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. But we're going to move along down to our first discussion item here. And the first discussion item via Fleen. Oh, by the way, the Google story was through a Google search and came from The Street, which is just a tech newspaper. We're going to come down here to our next story, and this is via Fleen. Akewood has become a subscription site. And if you're not familiar with Akewood, Akewood was one of the big ones. This was one of the darlings a couple of years ago. But they ran into some money problems, and now Akewood is purely subscription. You can't get any Akewood unless you pay for it.
Hmm.
The archives are still there, but anything new, that's it.
They may be big enough to pull this off.
Right.
But I don't think it's a good idea for the average webcomicer.
I mean, it's a good idea for Akewood.
No, I don't either. I mean, maybe PvP could pull something like that off. Akewood's in that class. It could maybe do all right with it, but I just think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I think it's a bad idea in general because your PvP is big and Penny Arcade is big because they update and because there's constantly new information there. You know, sites disappear fast once they stop updating. There's not a lot of loyalty.
Well, it depends. And if you're already big.
If you're behind a paywall, for a lot of people, you've stopped updating.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
if you still are.
And the advertisers, well, you know, your advertising hits are going to go down. Because if you're paying, for that and there's still advertisements, yeah, you're as a purchaser, you're probably going to be a little miffed that you still have ad-supported content, even though you're paying for it. So, but then again, this is one of those things that if you are big enough, it's possible to pull it off. I'm not holding my breath.
That was the thing about Akewood. They never had advertising. Akewood was never putting advertising on the site. They were above that, and being above that, they ran out of money for their hosting and had to go to a subscription service. So, you know, you can say what you want, but sometimes morals don't pay the bills.
Right.
All right.
And I don't think, advertising discussion could be a whole show we could talk about, but...
Yeah. Well, I think we can sum it up is that we all hate advertising, but we all need advertising. Pay the bills.
I don't really hate advertising. I don't hate Project Wonderful advertising.
Well,
because
no.
that's where I find all the new webcomics that I read.
Yeah, Project Wonderful is nice. I mean, that's the good advertising, but if you want to make the real money, you've got to get the reduce your belly fat ads. Those are the ones that you got.
Just follow this one rule. Obey. Anyway. Moving on.
Well, there is a very interesting article on an overview of buying comics digitally. And this is from two sources. This is from buying from the Comics Alliance, talking about the five different ways of buying comics digitally from Marvel, and then also about from Robot 6, buying comics independent PDFs. And we start off with the buying comics digitally from the Comic Alliance, talks about the five different ways, and essentially they say they're pretty much all the same. They're, Marvel Comics are now on five different sources that all do the same way, and they all have the problem in that you're not buying the comics, you're renting the comics. And at any moment, Marvel has the right to pull it off of your device, and that's too bad if you want to keep it. The other one, Robot 6, talks about two sites that allow you to sell PDFs online. And I'm forgetting the names of the two sites. But it goes through those two sites and talks about selling it. And we have on there Drive-Thru Comics, which is sort of the old one. And then Agreeable Comics, which is the new one. And they go through and they talk about it. They say it's a lot better than the Marvel method of renting the comics. And also it's, they like Agreeable Comics more because you don't have to make a login for it.
Okay.
Well, already.
Yeah. So, I guess that wasn't a discussion issue. That was just an overview.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. I mean, we don't all. I mean, Eric, maybe you might be the closest one that would deal with selling stuff, since you have a. When you're in the adult comic business, you tend to have a little bit more ability to sell stuff, but.
Yeah. Well. I mean, let's jump down to one of our tidbits then.
Okay.
This is the second tidbit here, and this sort of links in. The reason for these articles is the $2 PDF comic movement among professional comicers. And we talked about this last week, not 2 weeks ago, in quite a bit of detail. But the basic idea here is there's a real movement among creators to start to basically shuck out the publishers and just put your PDFs online for $2 and let people download it. And It started off with Scotty Young, and there has been a lot of talk about this, of that what you should do if you want to sell comics is forget the publisher, just build a following, and then once you have that following, put your comics up for $2 and people will pay for it. Scotty Young made $1,700 off of his comic.
True, but there's a key step that is kind of out of reach for most people, or is a very difficult step, and that's the you casually mentioned build the audience.
Yes.
And the thing is, without a publisher, without a distributor, if you're kind of like one of the lobbies, so to speak, where these publisher or distributors taking a chance on you. You know, that's exposure that they have the ability. Comixology has the possibility for exposure. That is, if people know about it. And I don't think Comixology is particularly advertising itself that well by some of the previous newscasts that we've covered, especially when their top downloads were only, you know, I don't think they're advertising to proper markets. They're just kind of relying on word of mouth, it seems like. But
I mean, what Comixology is Comixology is advertising Marvel and DC. And what these people in the $2 PDF movement are people who have worked for Marvel and DC.
Right.
So if you want the official way to make it in comics, here's what you do. You go work for Marvel and DC for two to three years, take their crappy job, take the fact that they're going to steal all your content. And after you've done that and made a name for yourself, then you make the comic that you want to make and you sell it for $2 online and you say, wow, making money on the web is so easy. That's the method.
You know, this reminds me of a documentary I just saw last night called Exit Through the Gift Shop. And it starts with this guy that basically just has a video camera, just videotapes everything, and then he suddenly starts falling into like the street art crowd and just recording them making street art and putting it up, obviously graffiti, illegal sort of stuff. And then eventually he meets the notorious Banksy.
Right.
And it turned, because he's like not making a documentary, but he's saying he's making a documentary just so he can keep filming because he's kind of a weird person. And then it got so out of control. It's like somebody's, he had an obsession with just videotaping. And then, you know, eventually Banksy saw the quote unquote documentary that he made. And it's just basically, it'd be perfect for MTV, let's just say. It's every like 30 seconds it switches to something else. It's just crazy. And so he basically told him, you know, it was just do your own art thing and whatever, you know. And so he did that, and then he started out big just because he had Banksy and I forget which other guy create, you know, just, you know, he bought advertising from them. He, you know, bought a promotional like line from them. Yeah. And then he started big, basically just ridiculous. You know, it's I don't even think he was intending to be like that. It just kind of happened, but that's like the thing. You can't normally start big like that and be able to put your site behind a paywall or really start selling yourself and expect big numbers because nobody knows you.
Yeah. It's who you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I mean, that's the major frustration that everyone has, is mm-hmm. that they think their stuff is good. And they just need someone to introduce them, you know? Right. And this is the challenge of the new webcomic paradigm, is that there's so many webcomics out there.
Mm-hmm.
You need someone to essentially sponsor you. And I'm going to move down to our next tidbit then. And we're going to jump down a little bit. This is the one titled Steampunk Huckleberry Finn, comic launched by Kickstarter and Neil Gaiman.
Well, that'll get published. You don't even have to think that won't.
And the basic idea here is someone came up with an idea where he said, okay, you know, Huckleberry Finn has a problem in it that one of the main characters' names is a bit offensive in that he's N-Jo.
Yes.
And so they said, wait a minute, what if we make him a robot? And
what? So,
instead of the slaves being black slaves, the slaves are all robots, steampunk robots.
Oh, boy.
It's the same Huckleberry Finn story, it's just everyone's a robot, and then you avoid the N-word. Robot Joe, which is very cute. And he put it up on Kickstarter, and he was working away, but what happened is Neil Gaiman saw this. And Neil Gaiman said, this is brilliant. I mean, essentially, that's all he tweeted. You know, he tweeted, this is a cool idea. And the guy got the money for his project within half a day. That's about it.
I mean, so, I remember the controversy, the little backstory. The reason why the reason for this coming up was likely because somebody wanted to go through and change Huckleberry Finn so that it could be put back into schools as reading. I mean, it's arguably a great literary piece, especially that of showing, like, history of America, basically, except that it uses the word nigger to describe one of the main characters, because that was the commonplace thing on there. And I'm not using it this word. I did say the word because I'm not going to not say a word in reference. I'm not using the word. We shouldn't be afraid to say a word in reference in America.
Yeah, you're
I love how on the news everybody says N-word.
Yeah.
When really they're saying the word. They're just using another word to say the word.
Yeah.
Why don't you say the word?
It's the context and the intent of saying any word which gives its power. Yes. And but we're not going to go into that. You can feel free to send me hate mail at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. But the point is that this one person wanted to go through and change it to slave, which doesn't sound, it's not that bad of an alternative. Honestly, I mean, it's kind of parallel to the reason for that that word to be used, and you know, that's what they were during this time, or they just came out of that. I forget if it was before or after. I want to say it was after, but it could have been during. I don't remember. I haven't read the book since high school, honestly. But you know, it's like one of those things. This is taking it to one extreme. It's like the Pride and the Prejudice with zombies, and that's a real book.
Yep.
And it's basically the Pride and the Prejudice, and there's just zombies around, sort of thing. You know, it's a different take. I don't know. It can be up to much debate, is all. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, the two keys is, first of all, it's pretty funny. And the second thing is that the fact that Neil Gaiman tweeted about it.
Right.
Made this guy. And this is the pattern we are seeing. It's not so much... I mean, we can go through a lot of other cases where individuals just got launched because the right person said, hey, this is cool. And it's a situation you are on the web right now, is that if you can find the right person to say, hey, this is cool, it can really make you. Mm-hmm. But that's the problem, is that everyone is trying to get the attention of these kingmakers now, saying,
right.
Hey. So, let's move on.
Alrighty.
We got tidbits aplenty here. I'm going to jump back up to the top of our list. And this is truly just a tidbit, but it was funny. This was a post on webcomics.com.
Which one is this?
This is the someone on the internet, somewhere on the internet, someone is stealing your artwork right now.
Okay.
not my artwork, but there's a document.
And this was post on webcomics.com, and if you take a look, there are two links there. There is one for the original t-shirt made by Allison Action of BareNuts.com, and then there is a menu for a Mexican sushi restaurant with the same figure. The interesting part is Allison Action's t-shirt has severed human heads in the sushi, and the Mexican sushi restaurant decided to Photoshop that out. The artist has talked about this, that there's not a lot you can do in that situation.
Why not?
You can send a cease and desist letter, but it is in Mexico.
Oh.
The laws are different. There's no way the profits they're making from this are questionable at best. There's really not a lot you can do. And this isn't even a case of an American artist stealing someone else's work where you can sort of shame them out of it.
Right. At this, I almost ask for at the very least credit, or a link, you know.
Yeah.
or even a proper altered shirt that she would get, a proper altered shirt for them that she would get money from. I don't know.
Yes.
Then you have to work with commerce between over the border, and I have no idea how that works. I mean, geez.
Yeah, but if you're dealing with a company that actively went out and stole and Photoshopped out your work, if you come to them and say, hey, are you going to pay me for this? I think the answer is probably going to be no.
Right.
And it's going to be, well, there's plenty of artists, other artists we can steal and Photoshop out their work. The only way, the reason this was noticed is that Bare Nuts is a popular cartoon and someone found it. But that's one of the problems on the internet, is the theft.
There's no way to lock an image. I mean, you could do a screenshot and copy it. I mean, until there comes to be a way to do some kind of permanent watermark on things where people can read it freely and yet not steal it, there's nothing you can do.
That's the nature of the internet. Somebody's going to steal it eventually, even if it is some sort of new proprietary thing. Blu-ray was broken in a week.
Yeah. Watermarking is important, and that was the problem here. The image was not watermarked on the... This was an image for a t-shirt, and the t-shirt company did not watermark the image when they gave the full-size preview. And so that allowed them to steal. If there was a big watermark over this, they wouldn't have stolen it.
Well, they just did they just draw over it, or did they actually steal the image and
they stole the image. They stole the image and modified it. If you go to the t-shirt company, you can click on the t-shirt, and you can get a large version of the image. And that's what they stole. You can see it's an exact same size image.
Nice. Still wouldn't stop them from tracing it, but I see what you mean. Yeah.
They're not going to put the effort into tracing it.
Yeah. that's for people on DeviantArt.
Yeah, they're not going to go up to the DeviantArt level of quality of art.
These are low level, thieves. They're lazy thieves. Even lazier, actually. Anyway, if you like, I'll see if I can. Yeah, we should. I have the link. I'll put the link to the T-shirt in the show notes and support the artist. Get the T-shirt.
Mm-hmm. So scrolling down. Glyph Awards for Best Webcomic Strip announced.
What is the Glyph Awards? I feel like I should have
no idea.
Okay.
apparently, it is mostly focused on print cartoons and comic strips. It is not a web cartoon-focused item. And if you take a look at their list, there are not many web cartoons on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's The K Chronicles by Keith Knight. I know that is a webcomic. Marty's Diner, I don't think, is a webcomic by Jackson. Revolutionary Times by Brandon Howard and Sean Mack. Solomon Azul by Jake Eckes. And World Hunt by Jay Potts.
Now, these are just the nominees that have been announced. And the awards are... The ceremony is actually going to be held May 20th, it says on the website. So, but there's like a whole gamut of categories and such on the site. We'll post a link. This is on the Daily Cartoonist.
Yep. It is from the Daily Cartoonist. Thanks for reminding me of that. I don't know much to say about that, except that, you know, we always... poo-poo awards, but like we said, they are important.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get an Eisner Award or you even get a Glyph Award, whenever you're doing anything, they're going to lead with that
right
title. You know, Eisner Award winning, whatever. Glyph Award winning, whatever. And it will get you into cons, it will get you interviews, it will get you... I mean, this is the same as, you know, someone noticing you.
I tried to do an award show for the Webcomic Beacon. We did it 1 year, and it's difficult. And we only restricted our categories to new webcomics within that year. That's it.
Yeah, and doing webcomic award, doing comic awards are painful and unpleasant. And my sympathy goes out to anyone who tries to do a comic award, because you will always get the same complaints. Oh, it's not fair. Oh, they have favorites. Oh, this is not relevant to us. Oh, who cares about awards anyway? They're stupid.
Well,
you know,
it's when you have more notable
people who aren't getting one.
Yeah, but unfortunately, most of the people in the world don't get an award from you when you do an award.
Right.
So you have 99.999% of the population criticizing you because they don't happen to be getting an award.
I think it mostly comes down to if you got a lot of... My big problem is when you have the community votes thing.
Yeah.
Because then it's not like credible, notable people that are bestowing recognition, so to speak. Because that's kind of where you have a little bit more... Because the higher of authority or higher of recognition of somebody validating somebody else, that is what... is most important when it comes to awards. When you have like the voting stuff, like the VGA awards, I think at least used to be, or the Spike Video Game Awards, which was, you know, very, very specific, their own audience. It's, but if like some guy goes and makes, you know, like Angry Joe, who does his top 10 video games of the year and top worst video games of the year sort of thing, that's his personal list. You can't argue with somebody on their personal list that much.
I mean, The public voting we have seen time and time again, if anything is actually at stake, it turns into a bloodbath. I mean, you know, you can point to that as one of the big problems at Zuda Comics is that they let the public vote on who gets a contract.
Right.
You know, anytime there is anything of value at stake, it just becomes a disaster. And this is one of the things that a lot of companies don't understand about community is that they say, oh, building community is great, and community want input. And it's like, yes, that's a good idea, except don't give them input to anything that's really important, or they will turn on each other like rabid wombats. It's a mess.
Yeah. And it's not a guarantee of quality either.
No.
No.
Oh, it's never a guarantee.
If I draw a stick figure, but I have 50,000 friends who will vote for me,
yeah,
then I'm going to win the contract. Where if I draw like Kurt Swan, who I happen to like, if I draw as awesome as he did back in his heyday, then I don't have any friends to speak of except Fess, and he doesn't count.
Oh, come on. Tanya's your friend. You know Tanya later today.
I might only get two or three votes and not, yeah, to not get a contract.
So no, but you're on the Web BS. Comic Beacon, so you get the Web Comic Beacon bump.
There we go.
Okay, so I get four votes.
let's see here.
I mean, we all know there are web comics out there that are utter dreck and that are just surviving because the person is popular.
Hmm.
And I'm not going to... Everyone thinks it's a different webcomic, so it's not good to go into that. But, you know, popularity contests using this American Idol system don't work.
American Idol doesn't even work using the American Idol system.
American Idol doesn't work. At least there isn't a message board for them all to start snarking at each other when the wrong person wins. if American Idol said, we're going to get your votes and then play a show of your recorded opinion on how the votes went, that would be the problem.
Right. I do want to mention another tidbit. We could probably move on from this.
Yep.
Well, then again, looking at the most latest update, I'm not even sure if I should mention it. I haven't listened to it, but the GigCast had started updating once again. If anybody who's listened to the Webcomic Beacon should know of the GigCast, they hadn't updated it for like a year and a half.
That's because we didn't have any good ideas for the last year and a half or so, they thought.
Yeah.
Couldn't steal any, so they...
Right.
I kid.
Yeah, maybe. But they have episode 199 up on their website at gigcast.nightgig.com. But then the title of it is The End. And it's like, well, I want to say you're back, but I don't know. I haven't listened to this episode yet, so. But the GigCast, I always liked the GigCast because, I don't know, they had good voices and it had a real polished feel to it. And it was probably it might have been the first webcomic podcast online. I'm not sure of that. But there might have been, like, one other one before them. Like when I started, I thought, nobody's ever done this before. Well, if I had done a Google search first, I probably would have found some. But,
Well, we don't know that it's the end, so...
Right, it's a question
mark. Can't say they were this or that. I mean, can't use past tense unless you know.
Well, they were on hiatus for a year and a half. That's turns into you're dead now until you come back. Yes, and
that's true.
So we'll see on that. But so I'll be watching this. But I wanted to give them a little plug. Hey, if you remembered the GigCast, you can at least find at least three new episodes, I think, since. So you can listen to those. But that's all I got for tidbits, I think. Uh-oh, we might have lost Eric. We did lose Eric. Let me try and call him back. So, let's see. One of the other things that has been we've been talking about on the Webcomic Beacon newscast for a while is that Border Books is obviously facing a lot of trouble in these trying times of physical media when there's digital available. Border has finally filed for bankruptcy. And Diamond is out of a lot of money because of this.
So Diamond has some deal through them, or
well, they got books. Diamond has books in
Borders. Yeah, I've read that, I heard on the radio that some big publishers have started holding back months and months ago what they were sending to Borders because they weren't getting paid.
Right.
So some of them are going to be hurt more than others. I don't know where Diamond falls into that spectrum, but some of those guys are going to be hurt a lot more than others.
I should probably find a Borders then. Present
enough to to sort of hold back a bit. It's a damn shame. I don't know. You've got Borders, Barnes & Noble, Walden Books, and that's about it in the United States. Maybe there's another big chain I just haven't heard of, but those are like the three, and Walden Books is actually owned by Barnes & Noble, I think. So they're really just one company, really, kind of, sort of. And then you had Borders, that was it. There's Chapters in Canada. I guess Chapters is kind of the version of that in Canada.
Right.
But I hate to see that. It's kind of a shame to see that go under. Not all the stores have closed, by the way, but they've closed a bunch of stores.
Well, they're declaring bankruptcy, and whether or not that they get actual coverage for what happens with, bankruptcy is yet to be seen. If they'll all go under, or they'll get absorbed, or what? Because there's different levels of bankruptcy, different stages, and so we'll be seeing. But in the meantime, go to Borders. Buy up what you can before it gets out, because as sad as it is, it's a good time to go buy stuff.
40% off their books, yeah.
Which is about what you can get it online for if you go.
True, but I don't know.
Very pricey prices over there.
I like the spectacle. Well, I sound like a terrible person. I like the spectacle of a store closing. That's kind of terrible, but I do.
FYI went under too, didn't it?
I don't know what that is.
It's like, it's a media store, DVDs and music and stuff. One of those big chains.
Like what, Samcoast or Sam Goody or whatever it was used to be. Samcoast, Sam Goody.
Yeah, just like that. Yeah, a lot like that.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can go, there's been a lot of these. There's been Circuit City, there's been a lot of these going downhill recently.
Ultimate Electronics.
Yeah.
Crazy Eddie,
Crazy Eddie was out of business.
He's been out of
business. What will I do without Crazy Eddie?
These prices are crazy.
When I want to buy electronics from a mentally insane person, what am I going to do now? I mean,
all right. Let's see. We just talked when you left. We only just talked about Border filing bankruptcy. So that's where we are.
Okay, let's jump up a bit to Bitly and Libya.
Yeah, what the hell is this? Why is this hosted in Libya?
Because it has the QLI ending. Any site ending in LI is Libyan hosted. So if you wanted to have a cutely named site, you could go to and get a Libyan address such as BitLI or also GraphLI and have a cute named address. Except if there happens to be political instability in that country, they shut down the internet, and your site goes down.
You would think. I mean, this part of the world, you would think that would clue a business person in. Hey, maybe I don't want that. Maybe I should just get something. Think of something else. Spell it L-I and find out what a country that is. And
well,
let's put it in an unstable part of the world. This is great.
The thing is, the servers aren't hosted in there, and, all of it's not like it could actually get blown up, but through a government action, they can shut down everything. So it has to be actually the government choosing to shut down the internet. They just didn't think. I mean, the scary thing, I mean, Bitly is annoying because everyone uses that to shorten their URLs. But what no one has talked about is there is a iPhone comics hosting company, Graphically, which also has that cute little LI ending and has this has the system of you're renting comics and that you don't have a permanent comic on your machine. So if Libya shuts down the internet, does that mean everyone loses all of their hosted comics off of their iPhones that happens?
Are they hosted there, or is it just a domain name redirect?
The domain is there.
Then they need to change that domain name, I think.
Well, if you have the ly suffix,
yes,
can't you just do a redirect to something else?
If the government shuts down the internet, then any internet address with ly will not work. Redirects. Someone goes online, it's dead. It is blocked.
This article at Bleeding Cool, by the way.
Yeah, at Bleeding Cool.
Quora.
To Quora, and it's... I mean, currently it hasn't come to that, and it may not, but it just shows you a little bit of the danger of these URLs. You cannot depend on them. But I found that a bit amusing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, speaking of political instability, I think someone needs to talk about this, because I didn't look at this article.
Well, I didn't look at it either. I was gone all weekend. Well, we're running out of time anyway, but...
We're running out of time. So we'll go real quick. Sarah Gideon's take on Egypt. Comments happen. Sarah Gideon, an up-and-coming comicer, recently released
Lydon.
A book, How to Understand Israel in 60 Days. She now puts up a story about Egypt in her comments, launching into some interesting discussion about journal comics and self-centered take on international events. And basically, it's that she can talk about it, but if she's not in Egypt, there's not a lot she can do.
The comic is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It's gorgeously illustrated. I think everyone should read it. And I think this is at pizzaisland.wordpress.com, by the way. Egypt from 5,000 miles away is absolutely brilliant. But it shows how here we are in North America. We're online. We're watching Al Jazeera live. We're all this stuff. It talks about we're tweeting with people in Tahrir Square and back and forth and sort of becoming part of this event from arm's length. Through social media, and I think it's absolutely brilliant.
I think it is, but I mean, I think there's also a side to this that we're not being shot at.
No. It's definitely from arm's length or more. So we're caught up in it, but we're not really part of it. Which is interesting.
I helped Egypt win their right for independence, just like I helped my football team win every time.
That's a brilliant way to put it. It is a lot like that. Yay, go team. I was on your side. I didn't do anything. I was at home watching ESPN or something. But yay, we won, didn't we?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same sort of.
Yeah. When I was heating up my Hot Pocket, I missed a little bit, but I'm sure it was really...
In any case...
And that rounds us out.
Yes.
That's the news that we know. This has been Eric Kimball from Xern.com.
Oh, wait a minute.
What?
I need to mention a... I'll recut this.
Okay.
So, let's see here. Yes, this is live. Anyway, that's it for this week's episode of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. We are presently doing the newscast every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can check us out next week as well. We normally have Alex Heberling and Ross got on with us, but they're not able to be here every week. Of course, go to webcomicbeacon.com for other podcasts, such as the Core Webcomic Beacon Programming, and at least once a month, a Tropecast, where we discuss tropes, really, honestly. And we had a pretty good one last time. We were talking about comic adaptation distillation versus adaptation decay. So go ahead and look for that. Check that out. We are available on iTunes. We have an RSS feed. You can check us out on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. And, of course, if you anybody else has news which we can tie into, you know, digital or webcomic related news, industry news, as well as some tidbits information, even a webcomic to book release, pre-order, or it's actually being released, you know, let us know. We do like to mention people going from the web to print, so let us know on that. And I think we just lost Eric once again.
Well, it's a good thing he said goodbye.
Oh, wait, no, there he is. All right.
I was muting my mic because there was background noise.
Okay. All right. Well, that is it for this week's Webcomic Beacon newscast, then. Eric, take it away.
I am Eric Kimball, writer for Extern.com and the person with much background noise, Mark.
And this is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
And I'm Fess of TooManyThingsList.com.
Tune in for more at WebcomicBeacon.com.